Most people go to the same old job every day, doing the same things every day, barely getting by. But it doesn't have to be that way. This is the real path to BYOB. Be your own boss. Change your life through real estate. On this show, we'll have interviews and inspiration from people who've made it, bringing you real life stories to help you chart your own path to BYOB. This is the real path to BYOB. Be your own boss. And now, here's your host, Mun Sachapuri.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Real Path to BYOB, the show that aims to inspire you to achieve financial freedom and be your own boss. I'm your host, Mansa Chapuri, and our guest for today's episode is Perry Zeng. He's the founder and CEO of Cashflow Portal, a real estate syndication software. He lives in Seattle, where he owns six single-family properties, and he started real estate syndication about 3 years ago. Today, he's a lead syndicator on more than 830 units and a passive in 2,000 doors. And before switching to real estate full-time, he was an engineering manager and worked as a software engineer at Twitter and Amazon. Welcome to the show, Perry.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. And I would love to learn more on how you switched to real estate investing full-time from your tech career and what really helped you to make that transition in such a short time frame.
Honestly, if you asked me 5 years ago if I'm going to switch full-time now, the answer is definitely no. And I know this is a real estate show. I technically didn't switch full-time into real estate. I technically switched full-time into working on my startup. But that might be a peculiar proposition saying, I don't feel that I will ever be a full-time real estate syndicator because in order to have the same level of income or whatnot, I have to be managing a lot of assets. And that is not something that I feel personally safe doing. It's not who I am. And it's I do it as almost as a hobby. I do one deal a year, but I don't plan to be a full-time syndicator. But yes, right now I spend 90% of my time on my startup and 10% of my time doing real estate syndication, which was also the split when I was working full-time at Twitter. 90% I live, while I was working on Lyft, 90% I live and 10% on my real estate.
Got it. So it's still a technical career, but a startup that does something around real estate.
Yes, exactly.
Got it. So could you share with us like what triggered that interest in real estate? Did real estate investing come into your journey like a while ago, or when did you start thinking about real estate investing seriously, and when did this idea for the software come about?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about real estate. 2015, 5 years after I graduated, I bought my first condo in San Francisco. It was a three-bedroom. I house hacked by living in one of the bedrooms and renting out the other two. Mm-hmm. At the time, I had no idea what real estate investing really is. All I did was do some math to show that, oh, my rental income and minus the mortgage, that will have been the same as if I were just renting a one bedroom in terms of the monthly spending, but I'm gaining equity in the house. I'm also paying down the debt. I'm also having these tax advantages. So that was the easy math. Then I started reading I was listening to Bigger Pockets podcast. I also started reading the Rich Dad Poor Dad. I think that was like a 3 to 6 month transition period where I just felt like, oh my gosh, this is not that hard. And why would anyone do it? So I started getting more serious about real estate. And then 6 months later, I also met my business partner, Ed Sittler from Bigger Pockets. We bought a single family in Seattle. Then 9 months later, I bought another single family. And then 9 months later, I bought another single family and just keep buying single families and use it as house hacking. Now, eventually, I ran out of you know, single families to buy in a sense, debt to income ratio doesn't, you know, allow me to buy that many single families in Seattle. And we started looking into a 7-unit in the nearby Seattle area in Tacoma, Washington. Mm-hmm. Then we did well on that one. We bought it, we flipped it, we sold it a year and a half later, making our investors about 60% return. Then we start looking bigger into multifamily. And that's when it's out of necessity in the sense that I needed to scale. But a good lesson to the listeners here is, you know, if you asked me 5 years ago, what is real estate syndication? Back in 2015, I think real estate syndication only was like 3 years old because real estate 506B was only a thing in 2012 and it wasn't being popularized by SEC until 2014. Now, don't quote me on it. So 2015 is literally the first year where a 506B is a thing. So I had no idea what is real estate syndication. So the lesson to the listeners is, you know, don't try to jump the hoops. Two multiple hoops at once. Just try to take one step at a time, buy your first single family, maybe buy a second one, and then maybe look into syndication. I think your story is very similar to that.
You bought
two or three, and you're like, okay, Austin doesn't really cash flow.
Right. I guess as a novice investor, when you're first venturing out, the single family seems safer. You're just handling your own money, your own risk tolerance. It's under your control. There's so many factors that come into play. And it's in your own backyard, obviously. You would try to live in it as a primary residence first or house hack, something like that, right? It just feels like it's much more manageable in terms of money and even the project scope for doing that.
In terms
now
of
that you mentioned debt to income ratio, I'd like to you to like just go over the numbers there for my novice investors, because I guess most people here are still trying to invest and scale their portfolio, so they may not be aware what that number is. Could you walk us over that since you had run into that issue?
Yeah. So in single family, traditional banks, they are lenders and they are brokers. The lenders are who actually lend you the money. The brokers are talking to multiple lenders, trying to pick the best lender for you. Now, they are all adhering to what's called the Fannie Mae guidelines, which is a federal agency. And Fannie Mae's mission statement is to provide affordable housing for America. So they are very, very friendly with real estate investors. So typically, Fannie Mae sets the debt to income ratio as 43%, which means your the monthly mortgage plus your property tax plus your insurance have to be at most 43% of your pre-tax income on a monthly basis. Okay.
So I'm going to ask the question just to dive a little bit deeper into that. So if someone already has rental properties, that rental income from those properties would be considered as their income, right? Pre-taxed income.
That's a great question. So Fannie Mae has these guidelines and it's up to the lenders and the brokers on how to interpret them. So sometimes you have to find a broker or lender that has a more liberal interpretation of those guidelines. So in your case, you have, say, one rental property and that has $3,000 of income and about $2,000 of $2,500 of expenses, right? You could argue to the lender that my profit might actually make a $500 income from that, right? But most lenders will actually not do it that way. They will take your income and then they do a 25% discount on that. And so they think that your income is 3,000 times 20.75 and then minus your actual expenses. So you end up that you have a negative income on their rental property. Okay. So even cash flowing properties to a lender, they are liability when you try to get a loan. As in the sense it negatively affects your debt to income ratio.
Okay. That's really interesting to know. Yeah, I hope my listeners are also making mental notes. That's a good one that you shared.
Right. Yeah. And then And if you do renovation and all that, or CapEx and maintenance, sometimes you can call it CapEx. Sometimes it's just regular maintenance. Mm-hmm. And if you report it on your taxes, well, guess what? The lender will always take the greater of the expenses and the less of the two incomes that they propose. And what ends up happening is that you have, you will always end up negatively affecting your debt to income ratio. Yeah. So every single family you buy usually negatively affects it. And second, say you have three properties now and you're trying mm-hmm. to buy that fourth one. Mm-hmm. No lender will count the third one as a rental income, because the third one, suppose you do a house hacking and you quote unquote living on the third one, right?
Right.
And you're trying to buy the fourth one. Every lender will consider the third one and the fourth one as
primary.
You have to be responsible for payments on both. Unless you get a lease that shows that you have rented out the third one. But the chances of you being able to lease out the third one without having purchased the first one, like, it's kind of steep, right?
Right.
And
right.
It's all, how can you argue that, yeah, I'm living here, but guess what? I'm going to rent while I'm purchasing this new house and rent out the other one.
Right. All right. That makes complete sense. So it's really hard to scale with single family because your debt to income ratio becomes a real limiting factor as you get to your third and fourth property. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
No. In which case, multifamily comes into like easy scalability, and your income—you don't have to just rely on income. The debt to it—it's completely different, right? So go. Let's talk a little bit more on why multifamily is good here, like the single family versus multifamily comparison.
Yeah. So single family is really good to get started. Mm-hmm. Single family is also really good to understand what it feels like to be a landlord. Right. It's very similar. Your listeners may come from tech, right? Mm-hmm. You start off being an individual contributor, being right. very good with software or hardware. And then when you become a manager, especially in tech, usually the manager come from a technical background. If you right. don't understand the hardware, you don't really become a manager.
Right.
I truly believe that you do want to manage at least one single family, understand what it feels like to be a landlord before jumping into multifamily. Because the day-to-day of interacting with the tenants, getting them paid on time, setting systems and rules and how to follow things, that stays the same no matter how you mm-hmm. scale. Because mm-hmm. at the bottom of it, it's same thing. At the bottom of it is just technology and chips and, you know, software, how to build software, right? Mm-hmm, so same mm-hmm. idea. The other advantage of the single family is the lack of psychological burden in a way, because it's your money, like you said.
Right.
Even if your property doesn't do well, you know you have the financial means to get over the hump and you don't have to explain it to anyone. Right.
So
that's really important. The advantage of multifamily is it's the only way to scale. Okay. It's almost impossible to buy more than 10 single families in the high income neighborhoods like Austin, Seattle. If you're in Cincinnati and, you know, like Midwest, yeah, you can get up to like 30 single families and you may be able to do portfolio single families. That's fine, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But if you want to do that, why don't you just buy a 150 units, right?
Right. They're all at one place. Right.
Second is it's the only way to scale. And second, it's one of the faster ways to achieve financial freedom, in my opinion. And syndication also accelerate that process for good or for bad. Honestly, it might make some people, they're not ready yet and jump into it, but that's a different story, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then multifamily also, in my opinion, is a feel good business. I owned the 172 unit as a syndication. And when I was checking out the property with my property management company, mm-hmm. I saw a school bus stop at the property and 10 kids got off the bus and then got greeted by their parents. And it dawned on me that the place that I owned or co-owned is a huge part of their life, of their childhood, right? So, and the fact that we made the living conditions way better, cleaner, safer, it's a feel-good business.
It for sure. Yeah, making that difference in the community, especially when you're entering into class B minus and class C and making it safe. Yeah, it definitely adds so much value and touches so many lives. For sure. So talk to us also a little bit about, so I remember you mentioned you went from single family to a smaller multifamily, and then you jumped directly into a 170 unit as a lead sponsor. How did that phase go? That's probably a very intense phase of learning. And did you take mentorship? How did you get there?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, I did go into mentorship. Go to a mentoring program. So we did a 7-unit and that went really well. And we tried to buy a 20 unit and we got outbid. We found that if we pay $50K more, we will have gotten it. And my business partner and I thought to ourselves, if we're going to pay $50K more, which is $25K per person, why don't we use that money to get a formal education in multifamily? Mm. And that's why we joined. You know, in retrospect, it was one of the best decisions that we made.
Awesome.
When we joined, we weren't really need to know much about the spreadsheet and the underwriting per se, because we have done it. But what was super helpful about any mentorship program is the networking.
Yeah,
that's helpful. And kind of this, for the lack of a better word, maybe the gossip and the ecosystem, like you kind of know what's going on, you know who is doing well, you know which property management company is good, you know which due diligence to use. That is very, very useful. Downside protection, you are not likely to get screwed because your underwriting gets reviewed by the coaches and so on. And then lastly is you came across as legitimate to the brokers and the lenders, and that will save you so much time, right? It takes about, for people who want to get into syndication, we got our first deal about 11 months after we joined the program, and we closed our first deal, 170 unit, about 14 months after we joined the program. So we joined in July of 2018, and we got it in about September of 2019. So more than about 14, 15 months.
Awesome. Was it an off-market deal?
No. In multifamily, especially if it's like more than tens of millions, usually it's not an off-market deal because the seller gets the maximum proceeds by having competition.
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess here in San Antonio and Texas markets, there are a lot of like mom and pop owners who don't maintain the property, have had it for decades, and then they would like to sell it off market. But then there's a whole strategy that you have to follow for that. So on that note, I had a question for you. So you acquired that property, the 170 unit, as a lead sponsor along with your partner, or did you bring in other partners also?
We bring in one, our partner, who is our coach. Good story about that. You know, people ask, you know, how did you end up working with a coach? My honest answer is you just have to be proactive and diligent. We didn't ask our coach to become our co-sponsor. Our coach asked that if you have a deal, I would like to be a co-sponsor. How did you get to that point? You get to that point by being very on top of things in the underwriting. So there were a couple times I vividly remember that we were able to do some formula in the spreadsheet to simplify the underwriting. And our coach was like, wow, I didn't know you can do that. But that was really cool. I did it the long way back then, but you did it the short way, which is just, because you want to try to figure out the total income, other income growth. And before you just type in the actual number, and then to calculate the percentage growth, you have to keep doing the math. But we just create the formula such that when you type it in, the other income growth automatically adjusts, right? Little things like that show that you are, maybe show that we are legit, right? We are smart. And after a while, you know, coaches desire is also to find talent and be able to partner with them.
Right.
And right. That deal ended up really doing really, really well.
And which market was it in?
So all our properties are in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah. That one's doing really, really well. We will sell it in end of the year or early next year. We're looking at anywhere from 70 to 100% return in 2 years, so which is really good. Awesome. And then we also like the coach a lot that it's in our latest syndication, we also partner with him.
Okay. Very, very cool. So as a lead sponsor, like, did you make sure there was a boots on the ground person here?
Yeah. So in some ways, I think I'm very lucky. My business partner at Siller that I told you, mm-hmm. whom I met in San Francisco from Bigger Pockets,
mm-hmm.
He was going to go with me to Seattle to do flips in real estate. But when we joined the program, he left San Francisco to go to Dallas to be a full-time real estate investor.
Oh, okay.
And a full-time asset manager.
Okay.
And we joined the program together. So
got it.
People ask me, you know, I would definitely not be able to do what I did without Ed being the boots on the ground, someone that I can truly trust.
Right.
And perhaps also vice versa, because we are very complementary in our skill set.
Awesome. Wow. What a great story of like being able to find the right partner and what a difference it makes. That's wonderful. How much did you have to network to be able to find your partner that you, are scaling?
Yeah. That's a great question. You know, Ed is not one of my closest friends. And I just been so grateful to have him as a partner. And sometimes there was a saying that you cannot connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect it looking backwards.
Right.
And I think maybe a small story will tell. I was posting on Bigger Pockets, complaining that everything is so expensive. And remember, this is like 2016 in the Bay Area, that I could not buy anything, even as house hacking. And I remember I was posting after reading Rich Dad Poor Dad, and I reached that point that told me there's like 1%, 2% deals, but there's nothing to be like that to be found anywhere in Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the maybe 20 responses, most people were like, they definitely exist. They are in the Cincinnati area, or that you're not looking hard enough, or they explain things in a way that make other people feel bad. They're like, yeah, I've done this. There are a bunch of off-market deals that you're just not looking at them. Well, yes, I'm a newbie. That's why I don't have the off-market.
Yeah, that's a different strategy. Like, novice investors will not be able to find that. Right. That needs so much time and patience.
Right. And then A just said that, I have some single families in Cincinnati and I could find them, and now they're becoming less and less, and I'm also having trouble in the Bay Area. Like, I think like connecting the dots backwards, he was very empathetic. He knew how to calm the situation. He knew how to move the conversation forward instead of criticizing that, oh, you did it wrong, right? And so he offered to meet up for coffee. He is also kind of starting out. He had more experience, maybe a couple, 2 or 3 more years of experience than me. Okay. So we end up meeting coffee. That one coffee end up being another coffee. And we were meeting up every Saturday, every week. Looking backwards, it's like, yeah, that makes sense. Why I was drawn to that kind of personality and that kind of character, because he is a very easygoing investor. And now that I have worked with many, many investors as well as vendors, I found that there are certain people I really enjoy working with.
Yeah, I think the personality match is so important to do business with, because I mean, in a professional relationship, this is like marriage, right? If you're entering a business with them, you're going to be stuck there for long term, for 5 years, 7 years, and you want to make sure it goes smoothly. So there should be that personality and wavelength match. I'm so happy to hear your story that you found your partner and things are going great. I'm going to switch gears a little bit to your technology software startup.
Absolutely.
When did that idea come about? You said that's your main focus now and the asset management or lead sponsorship is just 10% of your time.
Yeah.
So how did that idea come about and what do you do currently with the startup?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm the founder and CEO of Cashflow Portal. Mm-hmm. It's a real estate syndication software that helps syndicators streamline raising equity, sign documents, present the deal to their investors, and the investor have a streamlined experience and a modern signing experience to invest in the deal. Right. I started the company in April of 2020, which is about a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. literally at the beginning of the pandemic. Okay. Mm-hmm. I started the company because when I was doing my 172 unit apartment, I wanted something like that. And I was resorting to DocuSign and sending these power forms to our investors. Mm-hmm. So what happens is they send me the form, I countersign it, I open the doc, put the number they invest in the spreadsheet, give them the wire instructions. They will send me the wire. I check the bank. Then I put the wire receive, send them another email saying, "Yo, I just got your wire." And then every month we send out emails. Every 3 months, I was manually doing the ACH distributions. Right? Mm-hmm. It's very cumbersome. At the time, softwares do exist, but they were exorbitantly expensive. I will be paying $1,200 ish a month for up to 5 deals, but I only have 1 deal. So I will still be paying $1,200 a month. Mm. So as a first time syndicator, there's no way I'll be paying for that. So I also thought that this is a very green industry. People think that there are a lot of softwares out there, but the winners haven't been settled yet, right? Google came on the scene of search engine 7 years after search engine is a thing. They still end up dominating because they offer the best user experience. So I think I could do it better. And I love tech. I am very intuitive about what's good technology, I hope. And I was also an engineer manager, so I know how to build a team. So I end up kind of cranking at it, hire a team of engineers. Now we have a really big team. We have 7 full-time engineers, 1 designer, 1 account executive, 1 community manager, and 1 copywriter. So we have a pretty solid team right now.
Very cool. Is this your first startup experience?
Yeah, good question. It is I'm a first-time founder. That's correct.
Okay, very cool. A lot goes into that, right? In terms of, I mean, same as real estate syndication, I suppose, raising money, bringing in capital to be able to hire, and I guess the office space and equipment and everything. How did that work out? Like, if it was new for you, just want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So I think COVID helped. I got lucky in the sense that COVID allows me to work from home and or allows everyone to work from home. It also allowed me to bootstrap the company while working a full-time job still. I was moonlighting and I got approval of that from the company. So I was pouring all my income from my W-2 job into the startup.
Wow, what a huge risk. Oh my gosh, kudos to your passion.
Yeah. And it takes about a year and a half for the startup to really take off. Mm-hmm. So now it's, you know, I quit and I'm full time. And yeah, I quit literally at the right time. A year and a half later, I know we're growing like 80% week over week. And now we're growing like 80% month over month, because week over week is like, a few weeks ago, it was like too fast. It was like unreal growing. And now it's like 80% month after month. And with technology, I feel like you just don't see anything for a year and a year and a half. And as things start going like exponentially fast, it's unreal. It's unreal.
Yeah.
It's very, very fun.
So did you get like investors for that as well? Are you still in San Francisco?
Yeah, good question. So I am I live in Seattle.
Okay.
We will be raising venture capital funding as well as doing an angel round. Okay. That being said, you know, this is not solicitation or whatever. I feel very confident about the equity raising because I just did a real estate project. We use our own software for the raise, and people have commented that it's a much better experience than some of the competitors as well. It's very, very streamlined. And my people are in my, you know, investors are in tech. Usually when people invest with you, you want to schedule a one-on-one with them to just catch up in life, right?
Right.
And they are all more interested in the startup than in the real estate project that I was doing.
Oh my God. So very cool.
They're like, I don't really want to talk about this project because this is the third time you're doing this project. I know what returns I've got. But tell me about the startup that you're doing.
Very cool. Yeah, I think that's how all, you know, tech folks are, right? We love tech. And then if you also have a passion for real estate investing, merging both is like the best of both worlds. So I think that's what your software is doing there.
Thank you.
Excellent. So finally, like, my show is focused on financial freedom and also being your own boss. What are your thoughts about those two terms?
Oh, I love those two terms. I went to the Museum of Ice Cream. In one of the rooms, there were these kind of Legos of letters, and you can piece them together. Mm-hmm. And I took a photo of be happy, work for yourself. And those are the mantra that I live by. So, you know, I care a lot about financial freedom. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of what I do is because of financial freedom. You know, people have asked me, you know, Perry, now, you know, you quit for a month now. How do you feel? Do you feel like you lost a parachute and now you are just free falling in the sky? I had that fear. And to everyone out there who wants to quit and is too afraid to quit, right? And, you know, it's not easy in the sense that I am in the top of my career in terms of W-2 job, you know, by definition, because you should be moving up, right, in general. So I'm at the apex of my career. So, you know, be able to give up the golden handcuff, right, making the most I will ever make and just let it go. It's very scary. You know, I lost, you know, 80, 90% of my income, right? Real estate syndication is great, but still is 80, 90% of my income. But I felt like I do the startup not because of the money. I think I did it because I want control and control over time and destiny and what I wanted to do. And if the first month is any indication, I will tell you that feeling is exhilarating. It's really, really cool. Maybe I'm in the honeymoon period right now, but I was traveling in New York because I was like digital nomading as well. And so I finished my meeting. It's 3:00 Eastern time. You know, I lined up for a ramen shop that if you lined up in the lunchtime, it's going to be a 2-hour wait. But because now I can show up 2:30 in the afternoon, it's only a 30-minute wait. Like, you cannot do that. Maybe you can do that, but you will feel guilty doing it. I did not feel guilty doing it.
I hear you. Yeah, the freedom of time is priceless. Yes.
Yeah. And there's also a saying, one of the books I highly recommend is this book called How to Get Rich. It sounds really bad, but it's actually a really good book by Felice Dennis. He is a serial entrepreneur. He found one of the largest magazines in England. It's almost like an autobiography or memoir. He said that if you're working for someone else, your reward is sublinearly proportional to your contribution. But if you are an entrepreneur, your reward is exponential or even unfathomably exponential compared to your contribution. So, I definitely felt that everything I do now, I want to do it because it's important, not because, you know, because the company wants me to do it.
Love it. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. That was really, those are some really great thoughts to just keep in mind as folks invest and scale on their own portfolios and pave their path to financial freedom. Thank you so much for your time today and being with me and sharing so many valuable insights. Is there anything else you want to share on my show, or where can my listeners find you?
Yeah, you can reach out to me at perry@cashflowportal.com. Again, it's perry@cashflowportal.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn, Perry Zhang. And very happy to chat. Yeah.
Awesome. We will have that on our show notes. Folks, if you love this episode, please do subscribe and leave me a review. I want to hear what you enjoyed and what your takeaway was. So until next time, stay safe and we will be back soon.
You've been listening to The Real Path to BYOB, Be Your Own Boss. The 9-to-5, busting your hump for someone else, barely scraping by. With this show, that ends. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. And we hope we've helped inspire and give you strategies to maximize your passive wealth through real estate. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hook up with us on Instagram at Silicon Hills Capital Group and sign up on our webpage at SiliconHillsCapitalGroup.com to be notified about upcoming webinars and get a copy of the monthly newsletter. You're on track with The Real Path to BYOB. Be your own boss.